is best known for what is seen by many as campaigns in the Congo during the 1960s, and then also a failed coup attempt in the Seychelles in the 1980s. The book was recently published, but took Chris about 12 years to complete. Chris now joins us on the line now from Durban to talk to us about his book, Mad Mike Hoare, The Legend, and also life of his dad as a mercenary and a soldier of fortune. Chris, thank you very much for joining us.
And thank you, Lester, for having me.
No, thank you very much. 12 years, why did it take so long to write this book?
Well, the deal I had with my father initially was it wouldn't be published during his lifetime. Mm-hmm. And so I was in no hurry. And there was a lot of research, and I kept getting more and more and more information. And Dad kept on living. And I must tell you, he's 99 now, and in 6 weeks, he will be 100. So in the end, I said to him, listen, how about I publish it now? Would you have a problem? And he said no, and so there we are.
You write in the introduction of the book that it was in the 80s where you started actually recording your interviews with him or recording your discussions? Or just refresh my memory.
Yes, that's correct. In the 80s, in 85, when he came out of jail, I did a long series of interviews with him. I thought I'd better get some of this down. But, you know, under the agreement that nothing would be published at that time in a book, and so it wasn't. Mm. And then again, I interviewed him in 2006. I got him to answer all the questions which weren't in his six books, and which he had steadfastly refused to talk about. And even in spite of all that, he still didn't answer all my questions, but he did answer most of them.
Now, your dad was heavily involved in the Congo in the 1960s. It was a very turbulent process, turbulent time for that country. He just gaining independence from Belgium, the assassination of Patrice Lumumba. Just what is your father's recollection of that time in that country?
Well, I think he had different motives for going to the Congo, and probably prime among them was to make a difference politically. If you remember, the Cold War was at its height. The American view was that the communists were going to try and grab Central Africa and come south and grab the gold and all the rest of it. And by this time, Mike had met a CIA agent named Don Rickard, and they had become best friends. And Rickard influenced Mike into the American way of thinking. And Mike said, no way are my children going to grow up speaking Russian. And so, urged on by the Americans, he put up his hand when mercenary soldiers were called for, initially in Katanga in 61, but more so in the Congo itself in 64. And, well, it's well known, he and his wild geese, about 300 of them, in three campaigns lasting 18 months, crushed the communist rebellion.
Yeah, and there was... there was also a movie written, made about that called Wild Geese, and it was about that raid in the Congo.
Well, no, I think you're getting your wires crossed there, Lester.
Yeah.
The film, The Wild Geese, was loosely based on the whole mercenary theme. And that film was about how a multinational employs 50 mercenaries to go and snatch a black president. Okay. So that's all fantasy. But the Michael character in the film was played by Richard Burton.
Now, it was a different time back then. That you, as you said, was the Cold War, and I have every respect in how you want to portray your honor your father's memory, not gone yet, but his life, and as you say, his search for that that spirit of freedom. But has he reconciled yet about how many people have come to call, particularly white mercenaries in the 1960s, having these campaigns in Africa, doing more harm than good?
Look, I think if you consider how many rank and file ordinary people that the wild geese saved from atrocities, you wouldn't be thinking like that. Mm-hmm. There were also hundreds, probably more than 100,000 Belgians who the mercenaries helped to save from atrocities. I personally think that the mercenaries did a wonderful job, and of course they weren't angels. Nobody's saying that, but by and large, they stopped even more mayhem.
Now the use of mercenaries, people usually with military backing in African conflicts during the Cold War, has been criticized. But and you're saying that it was funded by either the U.S. or Western parts. And what are your thoughts of your dad in terms of the region's continued instability, which many people argue is based or starts its genesis from that 1960s?
No, well, you know, it's very difficult for me to comment on what he thinks. And yes, it's true that Kabila Senior and Che Guevara were on the same side in the Congo. And ultimately, of course, Che Guevara left with his tail between his legs. But Kabila went on to become the president. And now his son also went on to become the president, another one of these presidents who refused to leave after his time.
Yeah, but Kabila came after Mobutu Sese Seko, who was also not a very friendly character and was, many people would argue, was put in place there and propped up by particularly Western powers. But I don't want to get into a debate on that. I appreciate you wanting to honor your father's campaigns. And just what is his thoughts now on geopolitics as it stands in what continues to happen in Africa?
Look, he's very old now, so he doesn't talk about that anymore. But in 2005, he wrote a paper about this sort of thing, and in there he said, you know, why is the United Nations trying to do this and spending probably billions and billions of dollars, whereas a mercenary force of professional soldiers, you know, not harem scarems, professional soldiers properly led could do the same job in half the time at a fraction of the cost. You know, that has been his recurring thought over the years.
Yeah, my argument with that be because then there is a financial incentive to fight and not a incentive which is put in or instilled in soldiers of a national defense force or a national military, in that you have a patriotic duty as a citizen of the country to protect and serve, instead of an incentive by a paid soldier to basically go fight for a paycheck.
Well, look, if you take the Congo, for example, I'm sorry, but I just think you're being totally idealistic. You're never going to get a Congolese army to do anything. Mm-hmm. You know, it's well known, and forgive me for saying this, but they used to reverse into battle so that they could make a quick getaway. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah.
So they couldn't do anything in the Congo. Mm-hmm. You've got to have somebody from the outside if you want to achieve something.
But despite this, and we'll have ideological differences on this, but I am enjoying the book. I'm enjoying the tale that is told there. So speak to us about, you know, the spirit of freedom that your father sought. He has a very interesting childhood, a childhood that would have set the tone for his future. Just what was it like, if you can explain that to us?
Yes, certainly. I'm glad you've raised that because, you know, really all through his life I can see certain markers that have enabled him to do what he did. And one of them was being born in India and dumped at a school in England. And then there was nowhere to go in the holidays. So he was put in the care of a schoolmaster who had been in the British Army. And guess what? He had fought in the Boer War. Only some 30 years before that. And so this schoolmaster infused Mike with military fervor. And then on top of that, I said to him, but you've had so many adventures. Where did they all come from? And he said, I don't know. I just got a sort of double dose of spirit of adventure. And some of those adventures were, you know, riding a motorcycle from Cape Town to Cairo in 1953, trying to find a road across Basutoland, as it was called, and sailing and all sorts of adventures. You see, this was part of what was called living dangerously at that time, because if you live dangerously, you get more out of life. That was the philosophy.
And how is he now at 99 years old? Is he still so active and lively? Is he still looking for adventure, or is he resting now?
Look, you know, life at 99 is not a barrel of laughs, to be honest. You take it very slowly. You eat, you doze off, you watch a bit of TV, you do a crossword, you read a bit, you doze off. And it just goes on. But I must tell you, he hasn't seen a doctor for years. He is in very good physical health. His memory is not good, but the rest of him is very good.
So before we let you go, Chris, how can we get hold of your book? Where can people find it?
Right. It's all quite simple. The book is in bookshops in South Africa. People can get it also online from retailers like Loot and Take A Lot and Exclusive Books, and also from my distributor, Blue Weaver. And the book is also available for international listeners in the UK and Ireland, in some of the bookshops, and from online retailers. And if people want to get in touch with me, I've got a website. It's www.madmikehoard.com. And interestingly, and not many people know this, all the books that Mike wrote, and there are six of them, are available on audible.com with Mike himself reading the books. And I know that a lot of people enjoy those as well.
Okay, and that's Chris Hoare from Durban, the author of Mad Mike Hoare, The Legend.
Call Lester now on 021 446 0567.